What we've got here is failure to communicate.
This is Remember That Film, the show which covers a look back on memories, nostalgia, and behind-the-scenes facts that you may not have known about your favourite films.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Remember That Film. I'm your host, Adam Thompson. I'll be with you till 3 o'clock this afternoon. My first guest for this week is Jessica Mansell-Nah, and she has chose Predator as the film to look back on. Arnold Schwarzenegger may be the headline here, but it was actually Sylvester Stallone who initially got things started here. After Rocky IV was successful at the box office, industry type joked that if there was going to be a fifth Rocky movie, the Italian Stallion would have to fight some kind of outer space boxer because he ran out of human opponents to punch. Screenwriters Jim and John Thomas ran with that premise, and it eventually expanded in the idea of a big game hunt where Earth's most elite soldiers were the prey. As fellow screenwriter and co-star of this film, Shane Black, put it, it was the idea so brilliant and simple that it was hard to believe no one had thought of it. But while the story was straightforward, the production was not. 20th Century Fox had never heard the expression buy nice or buy twice, because when it came to the alien hunter, the Predator, which was the centerpiece of this film, they tried to save money by going with the special effect company that had the lowest bid. Originally conceived as something insect-like and incredible dexterity, the finished costume was not so great. It looked like a rubber red suit, almost something that you would see in a low-budget Power Rangers episode. And the only thing worse than the costume itself was going to be the actor inside of it, Jean-Claude Van Damme. There has been lots of different accounts of what went wrong and why he was fired. The big one was that Van Damme was an up-and-coming actor who hated the idea of no one being able to see his face, and his frustration was compounded by the shooting environment, so he wasn't a lot of fun to be around. But even if Van Damme was fine, there was another issue standing in 5'6" alien wasn't tall enough to share screen time with the bodybuilder and wrestlers that he was sharing scenes with. The filmmakers were stuck. The costume didn't arrive till they were halfway through production. They already filmed everything they could. Without it, they were forced to try and make this work. So director John McTiernan shot with Van Damme in the suit for 2 days before giving up, sending the footage to the studio and asking them, "You don't want us to keep going with this, do you?" They did not. Production shut down so they could rethink their approach to the film titled Character. Schwarzenegger was the one who suggested Stan Winston after working with him on The Terminator. Winston disregarded all of the previous designs, and he is the one responsible of turning this creature into a brawler and a warrior. Even though there were members of the production who acknowledged that these changes didn't necessarily line up with the new script that had this thing sailing through the treetops, they all agreed that they were not going to get anything better looking than this. And so the studio ended up paying twice the amount they would have for the original suit. But it was worth it. Once they put 7'2" actor Kevin Peter Hall inside of it, it became one of the most memorable movie monsters of all time. This is also when the film switched its title in the script from The Hunter. But the new creature was a more than that. His thing was huge and terrifying and primal. This was a predator. Although it was commercially successful, this was released in the summer of 1987. The first reviews were very mixed. One of the occurring criticisms was that it was blatantly derivative of other movies. Look at the famous Roger Ebert review. First sentence, "Predator begins like Rambo and ends like Alien, and in today's Hollywood, that is creativity. Most movies are only inspired by one previous blockbuster, but the film's reputation grew more favourable, and over time, it is now defined by many as one of the greatest films of this era." I'm excited to talk about this movie from 1987, Predator. I have my special guest in this week for our very first episode, our pilot episode. I've got Jessica with me. Good afternoon, Jessica. How are you doing?
I'm good, Adam. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us all, what do you remember the first time you seen Predator? Was it at the movies? Was it on VHS? Or when was the first time you watched it?
It was definitely VHS because, look, I am getting on in years, but I was not old enough to see it at the movies. So I managed to see Predator because I was 7 years old, or six, I think, and my oldest brother was having a birthday party with a bunch of other nine-year-olds who were arguably not old enough to watch Predator either, but back, it was a different time. So back in the 80s, my parents got them a video to watch. That was the whole party. They went upstairs and I decided I wanted to go and hang out and watch the movie too. So I had to beg my mum and dad to let me watch it. Now, I had watched the Ewoks movie not long before and had terrible nightmares from the fluffy, cute Ewoks. So they were very, very, very concerned about me watching this Predator movie. I promised them I wouldn't have any nightmares. And the good news is they let me. I don't know why. They probably just wanted some time to themselves. And I didn't have any nightmares. I actually ended up loving the movie. And it's one of my favourites. Probably my favourite movie. I've watched it hundreds of times.
Yeah, I have seen it a lot too, and recently again, you know, for this episode. Mm. My memories was, it's a funny one, because I had a Commodore 64 back in about 89. I got it for Christmas. So there was a game called The Predator. So I had no idea that there was a movie and all that. So it was all about you have different armies of men, and then if you die, the other one comes in, and you have to shoot all these army people. Then all of a sudden, there's the Predator at the end, and I could never get past this third level or know what to do. And Dad kept saying, "Oh, there's this Predator movie. You've got to watch it one day." And it wasn't until a couple of years later, probably about 91 or 92, ooh, of VHS. It's a big memory for me because this is the first movie I ever watched that was M-rated.
Yeah. Was it your first Arnie movie as well?
Yes. Yes, okay. It was. And then I think T2 was, I watched it with some friends about that same year. I was still living at Carra at the time and Mum was doing afternoon shift. So Dad used to, he did it with, because I'm the youngest by 10 years out of all the siblings, and he did it with the others and he thought, "Oh, I'll hide this while Mum's at work."
Yeah, I don't think said, Mum would have been impressed.
No. But I only watched it from the third act. So he said, "Oh, come on, it's not violent. This part here is good." So the first thing I see is the spine being ripped out.
Oh, yes, that's not violent at all. I'm amazed you kept going if that's the first thing you saw.
So I thought, "Oh, yeah, this is really good." And then the third, because the third act, there's not much dialogue at all between Arnie and all that, getting all the traps all set out and all that.
It's so true. It's like a different part of the movie. I was watching this again last night again, because I knew I'd be talking about it today, and I always love the fact that the movie has three such distinct
acts. Yes, there's three acts. So your first act is just, it's like a war movie. They're going in, the Expendables at the time,
yes,
this group was. And then you went into part two, which is the Predator knocking off everybody, which is very much Alien, sort of took that one.
Yep.
And then the third act's all, Arnie versus the Predator.
Yes, it's one-on-one. It's this real standard action movie, and then suddenly everything tightens with it. Suddenly these really strong men that, you know, just took out a whole guerrilla army on their own, and Arnie lifts up a car and shoves it off and they're all beefcake to the max, start getting picked off and they freak out really quickly. I think one of the things I thought was great about the director, John McTiernan, who also did Die Hard, which is another great movie,
yes,
but he really turned the screws on them and got them in this oppressive jungle with no way out, no idea what's hunting them. And they all start to crack. And that was, I really loved that part of the movie in the middle section there.
It is great because they're all, macho men, special trained forces and all this. And this is the problems, we'll get to that briefly a bit later, is the sequels. That's the problem with the sequels. None of the characters are likable. And they're dreadful. With these ones, they're great. You had two people that have been a governor since Jesse Ventura as well.
I know.
Yeah.
And did you know Sonny Landham tried to run for governor, but, I mean, no one was electing him because I think he was a little bit loco.
Yeah. I've got some info on him a bit later too. But in that opening scene when they're in the helicopter, of course, we have the one and only song that is from that movie.
Yes.
Little Richard and Long Tall Sally. Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. He claimed he has a music, but he having a lot of fun, old baby.
Bye.
Little Richard and Long Tall Sally, yeah, from the opening scenes of Predator. And, yeah, you mentioned they were going a bit crazy too, of course. Mac, for years I didn't understand what he was doing.
Completely. He cracks first. Yeah. I mean, and now I realise because his best friend was killed so brutally and that's what sent him over the edge. But, yeah, he gets scared really quickly. It's like he has a sense of what's
And he starts singing, "Gonna have some fun tonight.
I know.
Yeah, gonna have some fun." Oh, I didn't understand it first years ago. But oh, he's singing the lyrics for Long Tall Sally. Yeah.
That's right. I know.
Yeah, and that, one of my favourite scenes in that movie is the ICU scene because it just gives you shivers every time.
It does. Yeah. It's so memorable. And when you watch it back, you think, oh, look, he had such a clear shot to take out the Predator. And then you're thinking, he was just toying with them that whole time.
Yeah, he was there the whole time. Yeah.
He could see them. He could see them moving around and hiding behind the foliage. And he knew exactly where they were, but they didn't realise that. So they never really had a chance. I loved how Carl Weathers' character, Dylan, was always trying to make friends with Mac, and Mac just wouldn't have it. And it was quite sweet that, I guess, he ended up going after him to try to save him.
Yeah.
Misguided though that was.
yeah. Quite a few things happen. Mac goes, and then Carl Weathers, Dylan, the character, goes, and then Billy goes not long after that, or in the space of 5 minutes.
That's right, and they're quite memorable deaths too.
The only problem with Billy is it's off screen, but yeah,
true. But he does get a pretty interesting scene in terms of, as you mentioned earlier, the spinal cord coming out. I always loved a little bit of foreshadowing when Arnold and Carl Weathers meet for the first time and they have their big arm wrestle.
Ah, yes, the handshake.
The handshake. Who's stronger,
big testosterone, yeah, level there.
Make Arnold look good. But and then you know, Carl Weathers' character loses his arm later on and it's like, oh, that's just insult to injury, really.
What could have been interesting was, and I thought about it later, if they took a turn like they did with Alien, because if you watched Alien, you'd think the captain would be the last one there, but Ripley's there at the end.
Mm.
If Arnie went and then Billy was at the end fighting the Predator, that would have been really interesting, I think, if they took a turn there. But Arnie was the star at the time. I guess they couldn't do that.
I guess they couldn't. Although, I mean, from my perspective, it would have been if Arnie could be left there fighting the Predator.
Yeah.
That would have been really cool.
What day is it? The date? What year?
What movies were released on the week and year that it was at the box office?
Back in 1987, and it was June the 12th to the 18th. Can you believe it? It was the summertime, obviously, the summer opening in America. Because they have their summer in June the 21st. And you probably won't guess what the number one box office was of that year before we go to the week.
You're killing me. What was it?
Three Men and a Baby.
Oh,
would you believe
it? Which, oh my gosh, did Alan Silvestri do the movie for that one, the music?
Oh, he might
too?
Have done that.
He might have.
Anyway. Yeah. But here's our top 12 for that week. Number 12, we had The Chipmunks Adventure. And here's an Aussie classic, Crocodile Dundee, would you believe, coming in at number 11.
I feel so proud.
Another great movie, Platoon, also in a jungle.
That was a good movie. It wasn't.
Yeah. Yes. I played that game too on the Commodore 64 at the same time as Predator. So it must have been the year for Commodore 64 games.
Oh, there you go.
Million Dollar Mystery, I haven't seen that one. That was coming in at number 9. Mm. The Secret of Success at number 8.
Michael J. Fox.
Oh, yeah, that was a Michael J. Fox one. So he was big in the 80s.
He was.
After Family Ties and Back to the Future. Then we have Ernest Goes to Camp at number 7.
Some of these did not hold up.
Here's an interesting one because there's a link to Predator here. Harry and the Hendersons at number 6.
Monster feature. Kevin.
Yes. Yep, the same person. They found him from there to use in Predator. We have a classic movie here, The Untouchables. The Kevin Costner film. Robert De Niro was Al Capone, so that's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Brian De Palma directed that one. Mm. Beverly Hills Cop 2 was
still
at number 3.
Still pretty good, number 2.
They're making a fourth one too. Eddie Murphy's coming back.
I'm actually pretty pumped for that.
That could be interesting. And at number 2, The Witches of Eastwick.
Oh,
sure. That was at $14 million. But at number 1, Predator.
Yay.
Was at number 1 at $17
million. Well done, Predator. It was the little monster movie that could.
It was.
Let's now get behind the scenes.
Now, some behind the scenes facts that, the listeners may or may not know about. I believe me and you probably know a lot about this, as you're the big Predator fan too. You would have watched a lot of the special features on the DVDs or
Predator
and all
tragic.
That sort of thing. In fact, on Cult Fiction with my co-host, we had Paul Power interview on air, and he did the storyboards for Predator and stuff like Predator, RoboCop and Con Air, but Predator was one of his big ones. He did the storyboards on that. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, he met a lot of this cast.
Oh,
yeah.
Stop.
So that was interesting. So we'll go through a few funny stuff here and some stuff. So Jesse Ventura was delighted to find out from the wardrobe department that his arm was 1 inch bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger's.
I know this one.
He suggested to Arnie that they measure arms, with the winner getting a bottle of champagne. Ventura lost because Schwarzenegger had told the wardrobe department to tell Ventura that his arm was bigger.
Don't you think in some ways, like, Arnold, what a narcissist you must be, because he used to play those kinds of mind games in Pumping Iron as well with
his
competitors.
His early days, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to even plan that out and do that just so he could eventually get, you know, some kind of mental edge on poor old Jesse Ventura. It's pretty hysterical.
Smell like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, yeah. He has some great lines in there. You're going to duck? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Ain't got time to bleed. Yeah, he's got some great lines.
He was good. His first movie role, I think. He was
Because he was in Running Man as well, briefly. Yeah. Yeah. The film provided a variety of hardships for the actors, such as leeches, snakes, humidity, heat, and rough Tyrion. All of the night scenes were filmed during freezing cold temperatures, which was especially hard on Arnie during the later half of the film, when the mud he had to wear, actually it was pottery clay, became cold and wet. He was warned it would take his body temperature down a few degrees, and he shivered non-stop even when they tried to heat him up with lamps. It just made the clay dry out. He tried drinking Jaggerty, I think it's pronounced, or Schnapps mixture to warm him up, but that just got him drunk.
I was going to say, it sounds like an excuse just to get drunk. Nice one. Hard enough, Arnie. You're meant to be tough.
After Dutch impales a bad guy against a wooden post with his machete, he utters the immortal one-liner, stick around. One of his great great puns of Arnie puns. This was apparently improvised by Arnie himself.
But yeah. I reckon Arnie's the one saying that. I saw him on Graham Norton's show recently promoting the latest Terminator, and he made a real point to say that he made up some of his character's lines that were very funny. Literally, he was like, they were very funny. And I just think he's got this whole thing of presenting himself as, you know.
Well, his famous I'll Be Back one, it was written as I'll Be Back, and he said to James Cameron, I can't do that because of my accent.
Oh.
So he said, I will be back.
Yeah.
But he said, no, you've got to make it I'll Be Back, and ended up being his one iconic lines, which he uses in a lot of movies.
There you go.
Here's some classic stuff here. Jean-Claude Van Damme was originally cast to play the Predator, the idea being that his physical action star would use his martial arts to make the Predator an agile ninja hunter. He was dropped for being too short at 5'9".
Yes.
Yeah, and Arnie was, you know, between 6'2 and 6'5 at the time. Additionally, it was reported that Van Damme constantly complained about the monster suit being too hot, causing him to pass out. He also had allegedly voiced his reservations on numerous occasions regarding the fact he would not be appearing on camera without the suit. Additionally, the original design for the Predator was felt to be too cumbersome and difficult to manage in the jungle, and even with a more imposing actor, was felt to not provoke enough fear. Van Damme was removed from the film and replaced by Kevin Peter Hoare, who was in Harry and the Hendersons.
That's right. And a good call.
And he gets to play a bit of a cameo at the end in the helicopter too.
Oh, really?
That's him in the helicopter. Yeah, he's flying it. Yeah.
I was always wondered who that guy was. There you go. Yeah, Jean-Claude was a terrible idea. I mean, no offence, you know, Double Impact was great, I'm sure, but he was just too small. It just wouldn't have worked.
Nah, yeah. I mean, stuck to his blood sport and kickbox and all that.
Yeah.
Stick
to your lane, John.
The visibility cloaking effect was achieved with a bright red suit because it was the farthest opposite of the green of the jungle and the blue of the sky. So that makes perfect sense. The size of the Predator, the red, was removed with key techniques, leaving an empty area. The take was then repeated without the actor using a 30% wider lens on camera when the two takes were combined optically. The jungle from the second take filled in the empty area, because the second take was filmed with a wider lens. A vague outline of the alien could be seen with the background scenery bending around its shape. It's a bit of technical stuff
Very technical. And do you know what I learned as well? Because I did watch some of the director's commentary recently. And right at the beginning when Arnie flies in the helicopter, this is the stuff you don't think about technically with a movie like this. He is lighting a cigar and smoking it in the helicopter and he looks super masculine and all that sort of thing. And they actually had to digitally put in the glowing end of the cigar. It wasn't glowing the way they wanted it to, so they added it in later.
Yes.
Crazy.
I do have a little bit more on that one. Actually, later on. That is interesting. Most of the Carf and crew suffered from traveller's diarrhoea since the Mexican hotel in which they were living was having problems with water purification. The only one who didn't get sick was Arnold Schwarzenegger and John McTiernan.
According to Arnold.
Peter Cullen was reluctant to take the job of voicing the Predator as he injured his throat playing the title character of King Kong, but eventually accepted after seeing a picture of the unmasked creature. Oh. Yeah, a lot of sound effects there was...
Yeah. I can't even make that noise. It's a bit like a crow. It's half like a bird, half like goodness knows what, but it's so recognisable now, that Predator noise.
It is. Dutch's line, get to the chopper, is Arnie's personal favourite. It's catchphrase of all of his films that it appears. Yeah, it's one that gets used a lot as well.
It's so good.
The Predator's blood, a goopy substance, was the colour of Mountain Dew. It was made on set during a mixture of the liquid from inside glow sticks and KY jelly.
Oh, goodness. But another immortal line came out of that. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yes.
How many times have you heard that?
Yeah, so they used to always play it on the trailer or, you know, if they have. Yeah.
Yes. And it really just, it directs the whole film towards this plot line of we're now going to hunt this creature and we have to make it happen. With, again, varying degrees of success.
Shane Black hated the glasses he was given to wear as Hawkins. He wanted to wear authentic military issue glasses worn by actual troops in the field, but John McTiernan wanted him to look as geeky as possible. Shane Black also wrote this, and this is one of the ones he finally didn't write anything to do with Christmas in it. You look back at Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss, Bang Bang, Bang. Yeah. All the stuff that Shane Black's wrote is he just loved having it. Oh, even Last Action Hero, there's one Christmas line at the beginning as well.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then he ruined the franchise with The Predator.
So, oh, yes. Yeah. Just the recent one of last year.
I have no sympathy for him and his glasses.
Carl Weathers joked in the interview that Arnold Schwarzenegger got him addicted to cigar smoking during filming. Arnold's famous for smoking cigars offered one to Weathers, who initially declined because he was a non-smoker from his pro football player days, but eventually gave in. Once Weathers had tried it, Arnold gave him an entire box of cigars. Weathers ended the part of the interview by looking to the camera and cheerfully declaring, "Shame on you, Arnold, shame on you."
I feel like Arnold's just a really bad influence to everyone.
The famous clicking and gurgling sound the Predator makes throughout the movie was thought up by Peter Cullen. Mm. After the producers approached him to give the Predator a voice, he was taken aback because he had no idea what something like that was supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
Not to mention that the producers were reluctant to show what the character was finally going to look like. They relented and showed him the design, and Cullen, who thought the Predator creature resembled a horseshoe crab, remembered as a kid how if you turned one over they would gurgle, and that became the Predator's sound.
So it's from a crab, not a bird. There you go.
An attempt was made to get shots of the Predator swinging from tree to tree using a monkey in a red special effects suit. However, the monkey kept removing the suit, and the idea was abandoned.
Oh, I just wonder how many ideas they threw at the wall to see if they would stick.
Bill Duke, I always wonder this, you know. He improvised the shaving. The crew scrambled on set to make a razor that squirts blood.
Is that how that worked? I've always remembered that scene because you just know that his character, Mac, is going to lose it, and he's shaving his face for anyone that hasn't seen it, and he starts cutting himself badly. You just think, oh, this is getting serious.
The studio's insurance company would not agree to issue the production unless a bodyguard was hired for Sonny Landham, Billy, played by Billy, character Billy, for the sole purpose of protecting people from Sonny. The bodyguard followed Sonny everywhere to ensure he didn't get into a fight, since he was well known to be violent and short-tempered.
I mean, hashtag me too. I feel like the Predator set was probably problematic in so many ways.
You've got Jesse Ventura and, yes, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you've got to have a bodyguard to protect them.
Exactly. Yeah. That's concerning to me. But anyway, I guess all's well that ends well.
We're all going to die. Is he? Yeah, know. One of his great lines.
He was such an interesting character too, because while you've got Mac cracking up and Arnold's character, Dutch, was being really calm as a leader, you know, and then you had Sonny, who you could tell that Arnold's character really trusted, and he had just immediately said, "We're not making it out of here." It was such a scary moment when he said, "We're all going to die," because you would believe him in that moment when he said that.
That's right. He had it spooked from the beginning. His senses. The Predator costume weighed over 200 pounds, and even though 7'2" Keter Peter Hall was a large and powerful man, he had to be connected to a bungee rig to enable him to move more believably.
Wow. Mm.
Due to health and safety regulations,
they had any?
Arnie was not allowed to light the cigar inside the helicopter.
There you go.
Yeah, near the beginning of the film. As a result, the glow was added in post-production. So that's why the glow was added, yeah.
It's the magic of Hollywood.
CGI now.
Yeah.
Real venomous snakes and scorpions invaded the set during filming.
My goodness.
I could imagine they're in the jungle. The original plot had Dutch pitted against the Predator alone. Arnold thought this was a bad idea. The script was rewritten to include a team of crack commandos. I couldn't imagine that for 2 hours. Yeah. No. It'd be like Castaway with the Predator. Yeah,
that's right. But again, I mean, really, Arnold? Did you just come up with Predator and completely on your own and make it amazing and fix it all up? I take a lot of these things with a grain of salt. I wonder what Jim and John Thomas would have to say about
that's
that.
That's right. One of the elements in the sound of the snap, the Predator vision, is the whip crack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear that now listening back. Yeah. Most of the film was shot under the original title Hunter. Mm. It was only later, when the creature design was changed, that the movie became Predator. Showing this original title can be seen in the outtakes on the special edition DVD. And there was also a movie called Hunter in 1984, which is another reason they changed that as well.
Well, that was a good call.
Yeah. The Predator vision was created using visual effects and heat vision camera. In the novelization of the film, the Predator is very different from the creature that appeared in the movie. Mm. In the book, it is a shapeshifter able to mimic any form it chooses, just the slightest physical contact, and even capable of dissipating entirely, vanishing and becoming part of the blowing breeze. And its basic form in a tall humanoid creature with crimson scaly skin and nan-fingered hands. So, yeah, completely different to what it was. And if you've seen the special edition, what they originally had with Van Damme, it looked like a rubber suit, Ranger.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
I've not seen it, but I know that they then got on to, was it Stan Winston?
Yeah.
The studio to fix
it. It's on YouTube too, if anyone wants to look it up. It just looks awful, and thank God they didn't go with that. Rumours persist that Billy's death was originally filmed but cut from the movie because it was too violent. This is completely false, as Billy's demise was already intended to occur off-screen, with his scream being the only indication of what happened to him. The sequence is similar to the King Willie's death in Predator 2, more on that later, where viewers see the build-up to the fight and it's the aftermath, yet the battle itself occurs off-screen. Yeah, when the Predator does Billy's laugh, that is creepy too,
so
isn't it? Yeah.
Creepy. But one of my favourite scenes in the movie is actually when they are trying to get out of there, and they've got Poncho, and he's got all his ribs cracked, and Arna's there, and they're the three of them are helping each other, Arnold and those two. And Billy just is like, "Nah, I'm not running anymore. I'm going to fight this Predator. It's time." And then you don't see the fight happen. You hear him scream and just the reaction of Arnold and the other two, where there's this total beat of complete silence and they just stopped and they're waiting because they don't know what to do next. And then all hell breaks loose. It's so effective.
And Poncho, we haven't mentioned yet, but that the actor who played him, he built up all his muscles for his part.
Did he?
And the reason we see him in long sleeves is he had a reaction to all these insect bites.
Oh.
So he built up all his muscle and all that to be like the others, and it all affected his arms, so he had to cover up. So that's why you see him covered up.
Poor Richard Chavez. I always thought it was because he was the skinny one that he was covered up.
Yeah, but he actually worked out really for months, building up muscle for the role, and that happened.
Poor boy.
Before Blaine gets killed by the Predator with its plasmasker, I think, blood appears on his neck shoulder. It is revealed on the commentary, and you would have probably just heard that over having watched the commentary, that the Predator initially tried to kill him with its spear gun, but only grazing his shoulder, resulting in the Predator using his plasmasker. So that makes sense.
It does make sense, because one of the things that always bothered me was when the Predator shoots at Arnie and hits his arm, and, you know, he doesn't lose his arm, and you're sort of like, oh, come on.
But now that
kind of makes sense, so maybe it wasn't the most effective weapon that the Predator could have used.
Yeah, and we only have the one female character in there too, only has a couple of lines of English in there as well.
She's great, though.
Because if you're watching it for the first time, you're wondering, why doesn't the Predator attack her? And this is what I got confused with the video game too.
Yeah.
Don't have your gun on you. The Predator won't attack you.
That's right.
Because it's all about the hunt. And
that's it.
And that's why the Predator takes off the mask at the end, because if what Arnie was a challenge, you finally had someone as a challenge for that trophy or the skulls
that he could fight one-on-one with. I think that was the thing, and that obviously Arnold's character picked that up when she picks up the gun to try and help and he just kicks it out of her arms and says no. And you're watching it and you don't quite know why he does that, but it's because he's picked up that it's like a gaming hunt to the Predator, and he obviously wants to protect her. She's such a great character too, because she has to – I mean, she was a no-name person at the time. I don't think she was a famous actress or anything like that, but she had to hold her own amongst these incredibly, you know, overdone, overblown, muscular men. And she provided the whole backstory to the Predator, really, because she had grown up in that jungle and knew that every year when it was super hot, this weird Predator thing would arrive, and they had a whole folklore around it, and that's what was happening. So I always loved her character, and I was always really happy that she survived at the end. And in my mind, she and Arnie might have gotten together and had some babies.
Yeah.
Because
we see her on the chopper at the end, we'll have more on the sequel, what it could have been, though. It's sad what it could have been. Yeah. But let's talk about the score now, because we're going to play some score music.
So good.
Ah, the da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, I love it.
That's it.
I love it.
Even just hearing it, you get excited because you know what's coming. And Alan Silvestri has probably done every major movie in Hollywood. He did Forrest Gump. He did every Robert Zemeckis movie. He's done
Back to the Future.
Yes. Like all the sounds of your childhood are Alan Silvestri. He's incredible.
Very underrated, because I talk about John Williams, how he knew how to found that hook and all that. But yeah, Alan Silvestri did as well. And with this, it's great. And that was the main score. Plus, we hear the other score with Blaine's death and at the end on the chopper.
Yes, it's like almost like the last post, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, like the American post. And I love that part into it too, because it's like it's a whole different part of the movie, you know?
Yeah, it gives it a bit more emotion, don't you think?
Yeah.
It is pretty gory, and it is an action movie, and there's not a whole lot of characterization, but the music really helps you identify with what the characters are going through. And I think it was a cut above. I think it made it a cut above some of the other action movies of the time.
Yeah, definitely. Let's hear some of that score music now. The Alan Silvestri score there from The Predator, and some of it's haunting with the you know, yes. I just love it, and that dun dun dun, and the build up, and all, and you can just imagine what scene it is in each bit of those scores.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the most effective horror movie scores I think I've ever listened to.
Now, they did make some sequels, unfortunately, and none of them really lived up, or probably never will live up. We had Predator 2 in, I think, the early 90s. Bill Paxton was in that, and the joke is Bill Paxton's been killed by the Terminator, the Predator, and the Alien.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. He's got a place in history.
And all those, yeah, and he passed away.
Only, he did. He was
a year
young.
Or two ago now, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, that's right. And was it Danny Glover in
Predator? In the second one, yeah, Danny Glover. and Gary Busey. Oh, see, originally Dutch was supposed to be in Gone Nuts and Gone in the Psych Ward or something.
Oh, no.
And they were supposed to have him in it as a cameo, but Arnie said no, he didn't want to have anything to do with that.
Good call.
Yeah, which was good. So I couldn't imagine that.
No.
Yeah.
He went through so much to survive. He's not just going to go crazy and live out his days in a psych ward. Oh, I'm very offended by that non-existent plotline.
No. We're glad it didn't happen. You know, the Gary Busey parts are probably the only good thing about that, but it just got ridiculous, the whole story about being in the middle of the city. Because
well,
the whole point of the part is hunting, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in the middle.
And the gangs aspect of it, and I just, none of it really made any sense. And to be honest, I've only seen half of Predator 2.
Yeah.
And I just find it really boring. And the main characters aren't engaging. You know, you watch Predator because you want to see Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's right.
All respect to Danny Glover, he's great in Lethal Weapon, but it just didn't translate.
Yeah, before he was too old for this crap.
Yeah, exactly. He knew it.
And then we had, I haven't seen it, Aliens vs. Predator. It was trying to be a slasher film, I think, like Freddy vs. Jason or something like that. I've never actually seen it, so I don't know who won in the end.
No, and again, it's that whole, they've made the Predator the main character, which is fine, but I just don't think that's what drew people into the first movie to begin with. They've never been able to replicate what made the original Predator so entertaining. I think they've tried a lot of different things with Alien versus Predator, and they've tried, you know, having everyone get dropped on an island and fight a whole bunch of predators, and it just...
Yeah.
Just
now, that was Predators, was it in 2010, I think, that came out with Michelle Rodriguez, and they tried to sort of reboot and go back to that jungle thing. I saw it once. Mm. Look, I think it was better than the second one and all that, but it was a one and done for me, one.
It's not one you go back and watch again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no classic lines or classic scenes or, exactly.
No, they just tried to sort of remake the original in several Predators. And then there was The Disaster, which was last year, 2018 or 2017. Yeah, 2018 I think it came out.
The Predator?
The Predator with Shane Black. Because I thought, this might be okay. Then Shane Black's involved and I couldn't stand the characters.
Did you even watch
it? No, I couldn't stand the characters because they're just cracking jokes. And the whole idea, what made the first one great is these macho men who are fearless.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, they're going insane and really scared. And this one is just ridiculous. Same with Alien. You know, I loved Alien and Aliens.
It was very good.
But then after that, the third one was dark and depressing. And
don't get me started on Prometheus. Just completely bizarre. But The Predator, I was the same as you. I was like, look, Shane Black, Lethal Weapons are great. He wrote Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. That was great. He was in the original Predator. He's got an understanding of how, you know, John McTiernan filmed the first one. This could be good. And then when I was watching it, it's this guy stuck in a bus and then a lady scientist, and none of it made any sense. I literally couldn't get through it, and neither could my husband, who loves Predator as well, and we switched it off halfway and just thought, it's never going to happen. I think probably it's time to let Predator sequels go and just...
Same with Terminator. They got to let that go. The recent one, Dark Fate, is completely tanked. I hated Genesis.
Genesis
was terrible.
I hated
it. The first 10 minutes, I thought, this is looking good. I see what they're doing here. Then it just got terrible. Having the memory of two tie lines, it was just...
It
was lazy.
It was lazy, and Jai Courtney's not a thing.
No, I don't like him.
Not into it. Sorry, Jai Courtney, even though you're Australian. It was bad. And it's the same with The Predator. I think sometimes you get this lightning in a bottle with things like Alien and Aliens or T2 and... Obviously, Terminator 1 was great. With Predator, I think they just need to let it lie. It still holds up fairly well. Even the sort of slightly dodgy special effects work well.
With the arm coming off.
The arm coming off.
You can see that, how can a gun still be firing, you know?
Yeah, exactly, and all that sort of stuff. But I think the bones of it, it was such a simple concept of, as you say, having these incredibly strong and powerful men being picked off one by one and slowly watching their mental states erode to the point where they're frightened, so you're frightened. And they've just never been able to replicate that since, I think.
No. Some people are trying to do that sort of thing, picking off one by one, but it sort of hasn't. Alien and Predator was sort of the only movie that could do that.
Mm.
Well, I think we're coming to an end now. Thanks for being in on the pilot episode, and hopefully can have you in again to talk some other film, classic films as well. Just some final thoughts on Predator.
Final thoughts. Look, I will say this. It was the first Arnold movie I ever saw, and it kicked off a lifelong love for Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. I think Predator was really that first movie where he got to play a character and not be just something, you know, this heavy accent. And it was a real turning point, I think, in his career. And I've always really enjoyed watching it. I always felt like his fight with the Predator at the end was really so primal and really well done. You know, he's having to use traps and different things that he's thinking of because he's so overpowered by this particular foe. And watching that play out was really enjoyable. So, look, I'm available for a discussion on my next favourite movie, which is Terminator 2, anytime.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good one as well. Yeah, because there's a few editions of that. There's the 2.5 hour one and the added scenes. Yeah, there's a lot of that one. And funny enough, Predator, big part of me, that started my movie. I lost my father back in September. So Predator, he introduced me to that, which got me into, before that I was watching, you know, just PG films.
But
one, he kicked me off of Arnie movies, and then it was the Tarantino films. And then, he started my love of movies and just watching, any genre of movies. So the Predator's the one that started it all off. And T2 was the second one.
That's And then, that's a really special memory for you then as well.
Yeah.
No, well, look, I would encourage everyone to give Predator a go. If you've never seen it, I think it completely holds up. Maybe don't let your 7 to 9-year-old children watch it.
And if you have seen it, watch it again now after hearing that. Hopefully it gets you in the mood to watch it tonight.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Do it.
All right, thanks again.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks Bye-bye. For having me.
And it's time for the news of the week, and I have Robbie with me this week for the news in the short time we've got, just 10 minutes up into the 3 o'clock National Radio News. Good afternoon, Robbie.
Afternoon, Tomo. How are you?
I'm good. It is awards season, that time again, the start of the year, and the Oscars coming up. In fact, the nominations will be out next week. But we've had the Golden Globes this week that were on Monday morning for our time, Sunday night, of course, in America. And we have the winners, which we're going to go through. And some of these I picked and some of them I didn't. Same with yourself.
Definitely,
you've got a few there that you were right about. So we're going to start off with the TV series now, what won that. And the best TV series drama went to Succession. Now, I watched the first episode last night after all this because Brian Cox is a great actor. He's been around for years and it's already got me hooked after one episode, and I think it's already being renewed for a season 3 as well, which is great news. So I'm looking forward to watching more of that.
I was hoping Big Little Lies was going to win, or I thought The Crown would win because it's very popular, but I did watch a trailer of Succession the other night and it looks really good.
Yeah, it's got Macaulay Culkin.
Kieran.
Kevin was the character in Home Alone. Yeah, Kieran. Yeah, and you just think he's a dead ringer
and
for
Sarah
him as well.
And Sarah Snook, who's an Australian actress.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she's in it as well. Your Big Little Lies, I think, might have won last year as well.
Yes,
or the year before.
I wasn't
sure about the ending of that, how they
So best series for a comedy or musical was Fleabag, and I knew they were going to get it because they got it at the Emmys last year as well.
Yeah, they're only short episodes, I think like 6, because that's the thing with the UK. They're only very short series they have over there. I must try and watch that. In fact, Sex Education, you'd be happy to know, is back next Friday.
The 17th.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm looking forward to
Speaking of British shows, Best limited series went to Chernobyl. Oh, that was really in-depth stuff about the Chernobyl power plant that exploded, all based on a true story. 5 gripping episodes of that, so that was really, really good. I haven't seen any of the other. I have seen Unbelievable. Pretty.
Yeah, it's very intense.
Very intense stuff.
I will not talk about the topic about it.
Yeah, no, it's all based on a true story.
Yeah,
so,
which makes it even worse.
Yeah, so some people, if they've had trauma before, if you know what I'm talking about, wouldn't recommend watching that one.
Yes. Yeah, for the best actor in a drama series, Brian Cox for Succession. I was surprised by this because I thought maybe Kit Harington because it was the last season of Game of Thrones, or Rami Malek because he's supposed to be very good in Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot is good. I've only seen the first season of that. Rami Malek, he might have won for that first season before.
I think so.
Game of Thrones, yeah, a lot of hate for the last season of that.
That
it was rushed and because the books had already finished.
Most fans were very disappointed with the ending.
Yeah, they were. But that, you know, that's gone on with Lost, you know, in the past. Yes. A lot of people were disappointed by that. The best actress in a drama series, Olivia Colman and The Crown. And, The Crown. I haven't watched that, but I've heard nothing but great things about that. Olivia Colman seems to be a big name lately, the last couple of years, you know, The Favourite. And
she's also in Fleabag. And what the funny thing about her winning her speech was she didn't think she was going to win, so she didn't have a speech prepared and she'd had a couple of drinks. So I think she had the funniest speech of the night.
Oh, get to more funny speeches later. We're speaking of people who are drunk.
So yeah, we've got best actor in a comedy series, and that went to Rami Yusuf for Rami. I've never heard of the actor, and I've never heard of the TV show until I looked it up after the Golden Globes.
No, I haven't either. Bill Hader and Barry, that's the one that I've seen a bit of.
And Michael Douglas got it last year, I'm pretty sure, for the Kominsky Method.
Yes, he did. Now, the best actress in a comedy series, Phoebe Walker for Fleabag as well.
Yes, and she directs it, she produces it, and she stars in it. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I must check it out. The British comedy is very similar to the Australian comedy.
Definitely.
Humour. Yeah.
Best supporting actor in a TV series is Stellan Skarsgård for Chernobyl. That his son's Alexander Skarsgård, who was in Big Little Lies.
Yes.
But I've never watched Chernobyl because I know about the event, but I haven't looked into it because it's a terrible thing.
Yeah, it was a terrible disaster like what's going on now in the world. Best supporting actress in a TV series, Patricia Arquette for The Act. I have got that to actually watch. I just haven't got around it.
Very intense show. I haven't watched it and I won't be watching it because it is based on a true story and it's a very... Yeah, scary.
That whole, like, keeping someone captive,
It's really dark.
Oh, we got Best Actor in a Limited Series Television and Motion Picture.
Yes, and that went to Russell Crowe for The Loudest Voice.
For The Loudest Voice, their very own. And, you know, Bombshell's coming out soon too, which is going to be based on that same.
It comes out next Thursday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Russell Crowe was the only Australian out of the five to win. Unfortunately, he wasn't there to do it, so Jennifer Aniston read what he was going to say.
Best Actress in a Limited Series or Television Motion Picture, Michelle Williams in, which I haven't seen.
Vernon.
And Michelle Williams is a great actor as well. Now on to the big awards, and I didn't see this one coming, but the Best Picture Drama.
Yes,
went to 1917.
I haven't seen the film. I've seen the trailer. It's a war film. I don't know if I'll watch it, but it's supposed to be very good.
Yeah, I might be seeing it at the movies next week. Got to be honest, I thought Irishman or Marriage Story might have got this one.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens for the Oscars because now it's wide open.
Yes. And then we have Best Picture for Comedy and Musical. Went to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The thing I have a problem with this is I think it should have been in the drama category.
There is a lot of comedy in it. I was happy to see it win, and I actually think it will probably win the Oscar because I think this is Tarantino's year.
Yes.
Knives Out should have been the drama series. That had less comedy in it, by the way, too. And
I haven't had a chance to watch it.
That should have been a drama.
I was hoping Rocketman would get it, but it unfortunately didn't.
Best director, Sam Mendes, not Shawn Mendes, for 1917. So best director's wide open for the Oscars as well.
Yes, best actor, Joaquin Phoenix for Joker. Now, that was a interesting speech. We went into climate change and stuff, but...
He's very drunk, yeah.
I haven't seen the film yet, but I will watch it. And that's the second time somebody's won for portraying the Joker.
Yeah, and he's absolutely brilliant. This time the best as supporting actor was Heath Ledger after he passed.
Yes.
Best actress in drama and Judy, you might as well just give her the Oscar now. I think Renee Zellweger as Judy.
Exactly.
Yeah,
she deserves it because not only does she act, she sings the whole film. Very tragic film, but yes, she deserves that Oscar. Best actor in a comedy or musical. Here we go, Taron Egerton. I said this to Tomo, Adam, back when I saw it in May, that he would get an award, and he got it for, best actor in a comedy or musical. Yeah. Taron Egerton for Rocketman for playing Elton John.
I don't think he'd be nominated for an Oscar, though.
No, I don't think so
comedy musical
either.
One, but I was very happy to see him win. And we're best actress in a comedy or musical. Aquafina.
It's Aquafina.
Aquafina, yep. For The Farewell.
Have you watched that yet?
Most of it is in Forum. Yeah, it is a really, really loving story because it's based off, the writer wrote that based off a life story of his own life.
So, yes.
Yeah, just like Marriage Story, yeah.
And Best Supporting Actor went to Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That was a bit of a surprise
because I think...
Oh, no, I had that locked in. I got him locked in for the Oscar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was very, very happy to see that win because I love him in that movie.
He had the joke of the night, which he said, he said to Leonardo DiCaprio, if there was enough space, I would keep you on that raft, which was a Titanic reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, Best Supporting Actress went to Laura Dern for Marriage Story.
The only award
they got out of six nominations, and they were the most nominated film of the Golden Globes.
Yeah. And in the short time left, I'll just go through these quickly before we get to our song. Quentin Tarantino won for Best Screenplay for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We get to Best Original Score. I had this one locked in, The Joker. It's a great score off that film
as well.
She's
from Finland, yes.
Yeah. This one has a chance to be nominated for Best Picture for an Oscar. Parasite, it won the Best Foreign Film.
Yes.
And this one was a shock. Best Animated Feature, The Shock of the Night, Missing Link. They were even shocked. They'd see the look on their face. They couldn't believe it.
I thought it was either Toy Story 4 or Frozen 2, but I like Missing Link. Because I haven't seen it, but the main person that does the voice is Hugh Jackman. So that's cool.
That's all we got time for today, but we've got one more award just to mention. Best Original Song went to Robbie.
Rocketman with Elton John and Bernie Taupin for I'm Gonna Love Me Again. It's their first award they've ever won together. So I'm told to the year.